Hello, ActorCasters, and welcome to another episode of ActorCast. So happy to have you all here today. If you haven't already done so, head to ActorCast.fm and sign up for our newsletter so that you could receive the latest and greatest information when it comes to upcoming guests, showcases, and much more. So head to ActorCast.fm and sign up today. Speaking of today, we have an amazing guest joining us on the ActorCast. His name is Michael Ramondi, and Michael is a licensed financial professional who seeks to help folks in the arts and those who are arts adjacent increase their financial literacy by demystifying the world of investments and insurance. This is such an important episode for all of you artists and actors out there who don't really have a foundational understanding of the way in which money works and also how it could help you in your career. We talk about Michael's experience as an actor, what that was like for him, why he ended up making the pivot from acting to finance, and we also discuss how one survives financially in the arts. We also discuss the recently announced open access policy for actors' equity and what the pros and cons are for joining the union and what the financial implications are involved in that. If you like this episode, head to actorcast.fm and leave us a review. Leaving us a review will go a long way in helping spread the word about the show, and it will also give us feedback on what we could do to improve the listening experience for you all. So without further ado, let me please introduce today's guest of ActorCast, Michael Ramondi. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the ActorCast. Today, we have Michael Ramondi joining us. Michael, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Hey, no problem, Patrick. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I'm excited to have this discussion today. We had the opportunity to connect a little while ago on LinkedIn, where all great connections happen, at least for me. I've met a lot of great people on LinkedIn.
I've been shocked. I've had a lot of success meeting people on LinkedIn that I never would have met otherwise, of course, during the pandemic. But
right. Yeah, it's great. And I really loved just hearing about your background and kind of how you have lived in the arts. And now you're really, you know, putting it forward with regards to helping artists out there who, like yourself, are living in this topsy-turvy world that is the entertainment industry, and you're providing financial services that really help people get on track in their lives. So I'm very excited to kind of dive into the nitty-gritty of all that.
I have to say, it's so weird to hear you say that, Patrick, because a few years ago, if you would have told me this is what I would be doing, I would have been blown away, just like boggled. I never thought I would be the finance guy, simply because I think I share kind of a perception of money that a lot of folks in the arts share, and it was either, well, I don't have enough to do anything with, or the flip side of that, when I do have enough, I'll hire somebody to do that for me. But neither of those approaches are actually optimal, I'll say that. So I think it's I'm gobsmacked that you said that I'm being introduced as the finance guy.
it's amazing. And I'm wondering if we could start there. I'm wondering if you could tell us about your life as an actor. And,
oh, my gosh.
And what was that experience like?
Extremely challenging and rewarding and wonderful and horrible all at the same time. I think every actor out there can relate, right? The highs are very high and the lows sometimes can be very low. And finding that nice you know, as we say in as we say in finance, you know, I say ugh just because I'm going to throw verbiage and terminology out there that I'm using every day now, and I'm like, oh, you know, decreasing volatility, that's the big thing, right? So, you know, it's true no matter what career you're in, stability is great. That's one of the things we aim for. I mean I studied directing first in my undergraduate program. I went to a fantastic school in Orange, California, where I'm actually originally from, and then came out to the Actors Studio, got accepted to the program here, the master's program here. That's a three-year program, and it was an amazing program, but one of the things that I think I did that was maybe a little bit unique is that while I was learning something, I was also teaching it. So when I was in undergrad, I had a job teaching at the high school. And when I was in mass, when I was at a local high school, and basically, like, I'm introducing these, like, freshmen in high school to viewpoints. They have no idea what's going on. Like, like emotional recall and things like that. They don't have anything to recall. They're like 15. It was an awesome experience to take what I was learning and just, like, apply it right away. And so I did that also in New York. I just, every single directing gig I could get, I directed everything that I could, and I acted in everything I could when I was in grad school. And, you know, then I gigged around for about 8 years after that as an actor and a director. And that was sometimes great and sometimes really tough. I did a lot of independent film. I directed a lot of theater. Yeah, it's been a really eclectic career that I've had in theater and film, but I found my way kind of in education after that. And I continued to, we'll talk about this a little bit later, I think. We talked a little bit about wanting to discuss how to make a career in the arts as an actor sustainable, you know? How do you do that financially? Absolutely. Yeah, how do you do that financially, right? And the lessons I learned, I don't want others to make the same mistakes that I did. And mine weren't so long ago. It's not like I'm talking about, you know, 50 years ago. I'm talking about 10, 15 years ago. And so I think that the rules that I learned quickly apply. But I went into education, kind of got my feet wet there, learned sales, marketing, that kind of stuff, entrepreneurial skills. I mean, all of us as actors are entrepreneurs in a way. we have
Absolutely.
To be.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
So I learned that for a small, I say a small company, but, you know, it was a multi-million dollar company, and that is not a fancy thing today, but it was a really great learning experience, and I made a lot of mistakes and learned a ton, and then I found my way out to Seattle. I went there for 3 years, and when I was there, I started a nonprofit. Nonprofit theater company. It was great.
Wow.
Yeah.
That ought to be probably amazing and challenging.
Yeah.
All wrapped up together.
I literally bought a book that said how to start a nonprofit. And that was the title. I watched TED Talks and YouTube videos, just sat there Googling, and it's like, okay, step one, build a board. Step two, like, have a mission statement. Step three, you know, and so I learned, I did that all on my own, and I know there was an easier route that I could have taken. I think I stubbornly just wanted to learn it all so that I could help others when they wanted to do something similar and say, oh, no, this way is way harder. Do it this way instead. It depends what your goals are. I was working a lot in Seattle as an actor, but it's a very interesting theater scene there. So a lot of people will say Seattle is this burgeoning theater scene, and I'd say in the 90s it really was. I spoke with a colleague of mine. He's actually the executive director of an amazing theater company in Brooklyn, Waterwell Theater Company. If you haven't heard of them, I'd say look them up. They're amazing. And we were talking a little bit about theater in Seattle versus theater in New York. And at the time, there were a lot of smaller, mid-sized theater companies that had very specific missions. And eventually, the larger companies like Seattle Rep or Act in Seattle, they started to adopt those missions into theirs, and so everything kind of became homogenous. And when that started to happen,
interesting,
yeah, there was this weird, like, this lack of individuality that occurred. And then also, it's a very tiny theater scene, so it's tough to break in. If you've heard, have you heard the term the Seattle freeze before?
I have not. No.
Oh yeah, it's like the cold shoulder, but
oh, no. Oh, man.
But it's real, but it's not. I mean, I met a ton of friends when I was there, but it's an insular scene. And so it's tough to break through. And so we did a lot of things, you know, we kind of had to figure it out ourselves. One of the goals that we had as a theater company, and the company was called Play Your Part, we wanted to inspire action through the shows that we did. And so we partnered with another nonprofit organization, always a social justice focused nonprofit. And our goal was to elevate and amplify their message through our productions, sometimes more successfully than others, I'll say. But the big thing was that we wanted to bring theater to different communities, and we wanted to increase access. We wanted to bring companies together as resources, and we were lucky enough to find an organization that helped us do that. But after that, when the pandemic hit, we continued to produce work digitally, and I was then working full-time again, and I just wasn't totally fulfilled. You know, I learned that I love creating theater. I love working with a board of directors. I have no problem with that. Running a company day to day, I mean, bless the people that do that. That is right. So hard, I think.
Yeah.
So I had to have a real, like, kind of, okay, sit down, talk with myself, figure out what I want to do next. I looked at myself, and I looked at where's an opportunity that I want to learn more, something I want to learn more about, something that I feel is needed, and where I get to work with people that I want to work with. So I revisited some old, like, job interviews that I had done, and I realized there was a through line that I had where I was always managing money in one way or another. And that's when I came across. I made my way into this industry through the insurance side of things, and now I'm with an amazing small firm called Claris Group. We're a boutique financial firm, and SEC financial advisor, which I'm sure that all those letters don't mean much to everyone out there, but basically we're nationally recognized and accredited, and I'm able to do what I've always wanted to do, and that's help artists create the work that they want to do. I'm able to help people in a very broad sense. I'm not tied down. One of the things I had a difficult time figuring out when I was working is if I wanted to act, if I wanted to direct, if I wanted to produce, if I wanted to write. And I always felt kind of ADD about it. And so now I get to work with directors and writers and actors and producers and fine artists and paramedics. And I get to work with, you know, people in all kinds of fields and help them achieve whatever their dreams and goals are. And I am so happy. I had no idea that this was going to be the path for me.
Yeah, I mean, you led into what I was looking to explore next was, well, you know, why transfer to the arts to finance? But I think, as you were just describing, it actually makes a lot of sense given your experience. As you were saying, your various roles, you had been managing money in some sense. And in a lot of ways, from what it sounds like, you're now providing the service that in some ways you probably wish you had when you were running the nonprofit.
And even before that, that I wish I would have had right out of graduate school when I was on my own. It's the biggest thing that I've talked, anybody that I've spoken to that has a career in the arts, and I'm saying this broadly, arts or entertainment, has said that they lacked the information they feel that they should have been taught when they were in school about how to successfully be in this career from a financial perspective. You know, it's
yes.
It's one of the things that when I was looking back and doing that soul searching over a year ago, I realized I was really lacking in that area. And if I would have known then what I know now, I would, you know, maybe have taken a different path. I mean, I have no regrets. I'm so happy with where I am right now. I don't know. I think that coming out of this pandemic, and hopefully we're coming out of it, that we're about to see a renaissance of work. Work that is diverse and eclectic, and work that is new work, not just recycled or productions of something, you know, that already existed. I think, you know, work is work. You know, you take it where you can, and you're not always going to be able to do that dream project that you want to. But if you can sustain yourself doing what you love, then that's a huge win. If I would have known some of these things back then, maybe I would have made some different decisions. So I look at actors that are, you know, right out of school or about to be out of school, or you know, have been doing this for a few years and are like, oh, do I need to leave this profession and do something else? And the answer, my answer is no, you don't have to. But it is a little bit of a puzzle, and it's a matter of figuring out what your personal pathway is.
Yeah, yeah. You bring up some really good points about just the simple fact of being mindful of these things, because you're right, there's not a lot of programs out there that teach financial well-being and financial wellness and discuss the importance of finances, especially if you're pursuing a career in the arts where, as you were saying, it very much is like a puzzle that you have to figure out some way to piece it all together. I'm wondering, and I guess through your own experience, but then also in the clients that you work with as well, how can someone survive financially in the arts? What, in a broad sense, are just some key things that artists, that actors, that entertainment professionals in general should keep in mind regarding their finances as they're pursuing a creative field?
That's a great question. And Patrick, I don't know if this is the case for you, but for me, I was kind of told in school, if you can do anything else, go do it. Like, this career is not for the faint of heart. I don't know if that was something that was impressed upon you when you were in school.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think that's definitely something that you hear people say.
Sure, because there's going to be tons of competition for any role you go out for, and, you know, what are the odds? If you don't want it bad enough, somebody wants it more than you, you know, that kind of thing. I think that way of thinking is outdated and dangerous. I think that...
Yes, I would agree with you on that, yeah, absolutely.
I think that there's, you know, it's interesting because we actually found... The way we connected was through the Actors Fund via LinkedIn. That's how I met so many people and also discovered the resources that are available. But I would say, you know, to kind of share, there's two people at the Actors Fund that I absolutely love, but then there's also a particular person who's a CPA. Her name is Jody Carter, and she is, first of all, just a wealth of knowledge, but her work, she has a program called Financial Insight Training, FIT. And her work focuses on connecting your values to your financial goals and making sure that the way that you spend your money and make your money is reflecting those values. And it's very touchy-feely, but for us as actors, it's great. You know, we love it. You know, how often is money actually, like, talking about emotion, but everything when it comes to money, it's every choice you make in your life, and she says this, is a financial choice. And it's a choice, a financial choice to be an artist. It's a financial choice to be an actor. Now, the choices that then follow determine whether or not you're able to stay in the business and be successful at it. So I think, like, nuts and bolts, just getting down to the very basics, is know what your monthly spend is. Right, that's a very first thing. Like, when you get out of school, or even before you're out of school, or like when you're trying to figure this out, how much money do I need each month? Like, that's square one. And the amazing thing, not to Jody doesn't have like a film or a book coming out or anything like that, so I'm not trying to push her too hard. But she is so good at helping folks demystify the process, and kind of, especially folks that come from creative backgrounds and are, you know, have a lot of feelings around money. She doesn't use the word budget, and I like to say that I have a spending plan. So, like, putting your spending plan together so you know what that is. So her financial insight training is great. I'll say, like, the point of this is know what your spend is, and then don't be afraid to learn about things. Like, go out there, seek the information. I remember in college, I was like all about creating avant-garde theater, and like I was like hanging out in the East Village a lot, like going to like shows that were like you couldn't. I don't know. I was also like, you know, kind of down with the man and like anti this whole system, which is great. And I think that there's ways to not compromise your beliefs and still participate in our economy and create a life for yourself. Learning the rules that everyone else is playing by and how to make those rules work for you is not a bad thing.
Right, right. Well, and I think it's this starving artist mentality definitely doesn't help. This romanticizing of, oh, okay, I need to have zero resources, zero money in order to be a creative, fulfilling person.
And that's not realistic, right? That's not today. And I think, yeah, I love that you said the starving artist, because a mentor of mine, his name's David Marie Sharp, wrote this book called The Thriving Artist. And he is actually, I was going to say the other thing that I was going to recommend is, once you know what that monthly amount is, or if you need help figuring out what that monthly amount is as an actor, go to the Actors Fund. Rebecca Selko, David Marie Sharp, they do free workshops at the Actors Fund for actors. And it's a wealth of knowledge and resources to help you kind of figure out how to even approach this conversation. Because what's the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is to be able to do this for as long as you can, as long as you want to. Hopefully until you want your work to be optional and you have to like refuse roles because you're too busy. but you know, so knowing what that monthly amount is, going and finding the education and making sure that you're building up an emergency fund, but we don't really use that word. We use a POM fund, a peace of mind fund. So it's like knowing like, okay, so the longest I've ever been without work has been this long. I probably need to have this amount set aside to dip into just in case of an emergency when I don't have work. And ooh, I hate the term life hack, but life hack, financial hack, tip and trick. So one of the things that I learned from David Sharp is when you have fluctuating income, to take your pay that you do receive and put it into your savings account, and then pay yourself once a month that monthly amount that you need. So then you're never living paycheck to paycheck necessarily. And this is assuming that you can build up and get to that point, you know. But if you're able to do that, pay yourself that monthly amount, and that's your monthly spend, and anything you make goes into your savings account. And then anything beyond that, that's where kind of the next step comes in of like, okay, right? If you're fortunate enough to be in the situation where you have extra money, what do you do with it? How do you invest it? And that's a tricky question, because there are a lot of folks out there. I mean, I'll be very blunt. It's a very predatory industry. It's a highly regulated industry for a reason. And so finding somebody that understands your needs as an artist and that your goal is to keep doing that, that's really, really important when you find somebody to work with. Most of the time, an artist doesn't have the time or the desire to learn everything that they need to learn about investing in order to make that really work for them. And sometimes they don't necessarily have the resources in order to hire somebody to do that. But there are places out there, you know, that don't have a minimum amount that you need in order to start working with somebody or even have a financial planning conversation, which is important to find and just know. And using those resources, like, you know, somebody like a CPA, like Jody Carter that I mentioned, or the Actors Fund, I'd say go there, ask for those recommendations from those folks, because they're the ones that don't have any, they don't win or lose whether you work with them or not. And so just be careful, do your due diligence.
And I, from what I'm hearing with what you're saying, is that so much of what's involved in order for an actor, an artist to get their finances on track is setting up a structure of some kind that is going to almost in some ways become automatic, in a sense, kind of like what you were talking about, all the funds go in the savings account, and then you kind of set things up automatically. And it's setting up a structure in a lot of ways that, you know, maybe an actor might work on a role for an upcoming film or something like that, or they have a specific process that they work through when they first get a script. In a lot of ways, you are building a process to handle your finances. And I love how you were putting it. It really puts it in more simplified manners.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it has to, because, you know, I look at it like, okay, I need to be able to understand this. And then I also need to be able to explain this to folks that have been where I've been and know what it's like. I mean, I think the biggest thing is to not be afraid of it and not to be afraid to ask questions. There are resources out there. I would hope that, you know, hopefully if one or two people from this podcast, you know, listening to this, make use of those resources, I think that, you know, I feel good about having done my job. Yeah.
Yeah. Without a doubt. I encourage our listeners to do just that. I'm wondering too, Michael, you know, such a big part of figuring out finances with pay, all of, as we know in the entertainment industry, when it comes to money, finances, and paying members or cast members, crew, for what they're worth, there's so much fluctuation in that. And I think a big part of what plays a role in that is equity. And, you know, we were recently talking about this new open access policy for people to join Equity. I'm wondering if you could share with our listeners, at this point, I know that a lot of people have heard the news, but perhaps for those people who are listening, and maybe you could just share a little bit about this new policy for Equity. Not only share about it, but also what are the financial implications involved if someone is to join the union? Should they not join the union? Obviously, that's a personal choice, but what are the implications involved in that?
Sure. Like I said a little bit earlier, every decision we make is ultimately a financial decision, right? I mean, if you think about it, you decide whether or not you're going to make your coffee in the morning or go buy your coffee in the morning. So that's a financial decision right there. You make a decision, you know, am I going to take this role that's going to, you know, put me on tour away from my family for 3 months, but it's going to pay really well? Or do I take this, you know, stipend reading that I got that keeps me at home? I think I don't know enough about the open access policy to speak to it directly, but I will just point everyone towards the best article that I've read on it, which is actually from thefairyprincessdiaries.com. Not kidding. TFP is, they are well known in the theater world and have a lot to say on this. And, I think it's worth a read, their most recent article on it. But what I will say is that joining the union is a business decision, bottom line. And so something really important to know is how will that impact you financially, because it's not a business decision to be taken lightly. Once you've joined, and then you have dues, and you have certain reasons to join, not just because you can. And I think that comes down to, you know, how much income are you making? How much are you working? What does your resume look like? Do you need to continue to gain experience in one area? And just where you are in your career. If you're at that point where you keep booking the non-equity work and you're getting called back for the equity work, but you just can't seem to get cast, maybe it's time for you. Maybe your agent or manager will have a recommendation for you. But I would say, just be very careful about joining. You know, my personal journey, I'm SAG eligible, and based on where I lived, I actually never decided to join the union yet. I'm a must join on my next film, but I pushed it off for as long as I could, simply because I was working and I was also doing other things. And I think that that's that's the biggest thing too. You know, in order to survive, whether you're union or not union, and kind of taking it back, this was a really important point I forgot to make. I think finding something that you love to do in addition to your talent and your craft as an actor is not a bad thing. We talked about this before, right? That idea of like, you know, it's this or nothing, starving artist mentality. That is not the truth today. So how many actors do you look at and they're also doing so many other things? You know, if you're familiar with the show that just closed in the Meatpacking District, Seven Deadly Sins, the Tectonic Theater Project show.
Yeah, sure. I've heard of it. I didn't see it though.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I'm just giving this as an example. Like, it was amazing. They employed so many artists to work on this show, but also they had digital programs, and these digital programs are basically, it's a design from a company called Marquee Digital, founded by an actor, two actors actually, who, you know, this was the side business that they were kind of working on, website building, websites and web development, things along those lines, and transitioned to this. And both of them are still actors. They're still doing their craft, but they always had this other thing that they were doing as well, because sometimes if you can find that thing for you that is something that you love to do, that is another skill set, that is flexible. And that's really, really important, is having those boundaries. Something that you have the autonomy to, when your theater work or your film work is robust, this can dissipate a little bit, and vice versa. So it's keeping you afloat and keeping you alive financially between your gigs. But also another thing that you're doing. You know, I like to remind people that Shakespeare was a real estate agent.
Was he really?
Yeah, little. Oh, wait. It's like the one thing I remember from my classics class.
Oh my gosh, I don't think I ever knew that.
It was found where like there were contracts or something, and he was like I mean, obviously it was way different then.
Oh well, yeah, but of course. But he had another skill set while he was writing these amazing plays. Yeah,
Arguably the greatest playwright ever can also be doing a different thing. Like, there's no shame in it, and B, it's kind of a new reality. And you know, bless the people that are able to just, you know, have the financial independence to be able to go out and just devote all their time and energy to their craft. And yeah, I think that there's no sense in villainizing them, but there is a lot of sense in figuring out, you know, what is the path for us? Like, how do you make your way? And I don't mean like how many actors. Oh, this is something interesting. I've never waited a table in my life. So I figured it out. I did a lot of tutoring. I did a lot of other work at restaurants and a lot of other things. I never waited a table. And I think it was just because, honestly, I don't have that great of a memory. I can memorize a script just fine. But please don't give me your order, because I will mess it up. And I am also clumsy, so I will drop it too on the way to your table. Like, I can't, anyone who is a server, like, I have all the respect in the world and do not know how you do that job. But I don't know how many people really, really love it. And I think that again is an old kind of fallacy that we've been led to believe, that like, oh, you're an actor, are you also a waiter? A dear friend of mine, I remember, she's a Juilliard graduate and working actor, and she was waiting tables, and somebody said to her, oh, are you an actor? And she's like, yeah, I am. And they're like, oh, where do you go, Juilliard? She's like, yeah, actually I do, it's my last year.
Yeah, it's funny that stereotype has been so ingrained, I think, in artistic culture, that, oh, if you're going to pursue being an actor, be prepared to wait tables or bartend or do any combination of those types of service jobs, which are great in a lot of ways. But I think what you're saying is something that's really important, in that, like, especially in our day and age now, with especially after COVID, but even before COVID, like, the opportunity to work remotely, to work online, to have that sort of flexibility. I think now more than ever, the opportunities are abundant for actors to develop other skill sets that allow them to be a little more flexible and could support them at the same time, outside of their only options being to wait tables and to bartend.
Right. You probably didn't know how to podcast right out of, I don't know, school or whatever.
Oh,
right?
No.
You had to teach yourself,
yeah.
Right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that's definitely been a skill set that has helped me, in my artistic career for sure.
Sure.
And yeah, and I think as you were mentioning, like you were saying, the people who had done web design as
right.
well and web development, there's a lot of opportunities out there. And I think it's just figuring out what your skill sets are
yeah.
and trying to tap in, because I think those type of jobs and experiences also make you a more well-rounded actor also.
100%.
And so, yes, while I think it's good to have focus and clarity and to not waver too much on your pursuit as an actor. And of course, there'll always be a little bit of wavering. But while I think an overall focused and clear mind is helpful, it's also good to be able to pay the bills at the same
yeah.
time. And to do something to pay the bills with a skill set that you at least somewhat enjoy, or that at least you could build upon and grow in, I think is very helpful.
I think of all the actors, so you know the show Inside the Actor's Studio, it was it was a class for me in graduate school, and we actually had to go and watch the filmings and tapings of them, and you know, I don't think there was a single actor I saw give an interview that is only what they did, that they only were able to act from day one. They had some other jobs other than Jean Smart. I didn't see her on the Actor's Studio. I don't know if she was ever even on it, but I need to go back and see if she was, because that's definitely an amazing interview. But Jean Smart, who we all know now, if we didn't before, shame on us. She, you know, she's one of the few people that she's only been an actor. But I mean, you think about it, it's like, wow, how many people actually only had that as their one career? I think there's a statistic out there that the average adult moves through 3 different careers in their lifetime, and average American maybe, but I mean, we have to be jacks of all trades, master of none, right? I mean, kind of that's the thing, is learn a little bit about a lot of things.
But yeah.
I will say, even doing what I'm doing now, like it doesn't, even doing what I'm doing now, it doesn't mean that I've given up on my artistic pursuits. One of my favorite things in the world is to develop new work. And I'm working with a playwright on a new piece right now. We're very early on in the development process for that. I love directing, and I hope to be able to bring it to life in the course of time. I don't know how long that will be, but I love to do that kind of work. And so you don't have to give it up, you know?
Right.
And I do think it's very important also to think about other organizations that are doing the kind of work that you're really excited about and passionate about, and seeing what the resources are that they offer. You may be surprised, and it never hurts to ask. So everyone wants to see, at least my naive perception is that everyone wants to see everyone else be successful. but I think that's especially true if we can, you know, I know a lot of people in the arts and people who are in arts adjacent organizations that want to see artists continue making their work and be successful, and are willing to help and with resources and knowledge and that kind of thing. So it never hurts to ask, just reaching out and asking. Sometimes that's the first step.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to join us on the ActorCast, and not only for taking the time, but I also, as I mentioned before, really appreciate the work that you're doing. You really are helping artists discover more about themselves through improving their finances, and to be able to empower them to provide the means to then pursue their creative work. I think sometimes we get it a little backwards, where sometimes we think, oh, once we do the creative work and it's amazing, that will get us all the money that we need. But I think it's important to kind of look at the other side of that, that, okay, if we are able to create financial wellness for ourselves and really create a foundation that we feel confident on, then we could go and pursue our creative work more fully. So thank you so much for taking the time. But before we part ways, I'm just wondering if you could share with us where our listeners could find out more information about you and your work.
Of course. So you can find me on Facebook at Michael Raimondi, Wealth Manager. Or you can find me on clarisfinancial.com. That's Claris Group's website. Brian Coslow is principal there and an amazing mentor of mine. And those are probably the best. Or LinkedIn, of course, just like you and I connected. That is a fantastic way to find me. My Instagram is not, I don't know. I post a lot of food and puppy pictures. So if you want to see that. Find me at MF Raimondi on Instagram.
Well, great. I'll make sure to include the links to these various resources on our show notes. So all our listeners, all you have to do is scroll down, click those resources. Highly recommend checking them out. Michael, I'm just wondering before we sign off for today, if you have any parting words of advice for those tuning in.
You know, I don't have words of advice for our listeners. I have a quote to share, and I think it's very interesting because so often as actors we want affirmation and we want to be told that we are good and talented and cared about. And someone, I don't remember how I came across this, but I came across this Rumi quote that says, "Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it." And I think that that's a really interesting thing when we think about ourselves as artists. What obstacles are we putting in our paths to achieving our own goals? Are people trying to reach out to us, help us, lift us up, and are we blocking that somehow? I think that, not to speak naively, that there are a lot of folks out there who don't have the same resources or opportunities as others, and it's up to each of us to look inward and see if we're keeping ourselves from realizing our full potential, so that those who are struggling and need help can actually be given the help, as opposed to it wasted on those of us that already have the ability to do something.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of ActorCast. You can head to actorcast.fm and leave us a review to let us know what you thought of this episode. If you haven't already done so, sign up for our newsletter to get the latest and greatest information on upcoming guests, showcases, and much more. I look forward to catching you all in the next episode, and you know what time it is. It's time to go out and create.